Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. But first, let me apologize for some technical difficulties. We finally are back. Fred, how are you today?
I'm great, Carlos. I wondered if I was going to hear you again. I was very anxious here. Hey, Carlos, the PGA Tour is in the California desert. The European Tour is in Qatar. And the PGA merchandise show is going on in Orlando. Let's go.
And you know what? You are there in Orlando. So we're everywhere. We're everywhere. So let's go. We have a lot of things to talk about. Yes, we are right there, vanguard, pioneers all the time, bringing you the latest news. But we're going to start right away, as usual, with our Par 5 news, which is presented to you by United Golf Network. So, Fred, I believe you have something about the Golf Channel. Happy birthday to them, right?
Yes, Carlos. They celebrated their 20th year anniversary on Saturday. Arnold Palmer threw the switch to turn on the power for the Golf Channel January 17th of 1995, and most people scoffed at the idea of a full-time Golf Channel. Craig Kann, Mike Rich, Brian Hammons, Kelly Tillman were some of the original cast members on hand to tell stories on the reunion show on Saturday. The network was launched, as I said, in 1995, and it could only be seen in about 10,000 homes. It began as a premium fee. It was $6.95 to get the channel on your TV, a part of your basic cable. It became part of basic cable at the end of the year, and then all of a sudden they're in 1.4 million homes. Well, Carlos, 20 years later, they're in roughly 120 million homes in 83 countries and broadcast in 12 languages around the world. With their offices right here in Orlando, Florida, they've expanded to 160,000 square feet. And then they've got programming 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's just golf wall to wall. You know, the first tournament that they broadcast was the Dubai Desert Classic that's coming up next week, which Freddie Couples won in 1995. On its 20th anniversary show, or on this 20th anniversary year, they're going to have 4 hours of live coverage from Rory McIlroy's season debut in Abu Dhabi, 7 hours of tape coverage and 4 hours of live coverage from the Sony Open, including the pregame show and morning drive and all the other stuff that they have going on. So, you know, Arnold Palmer was one of the original investors in this thing to get it going, and he was quoted saying, you know, it's a really big deal. Everybody is excited and happy with the channel and all the stuff going on. Who would have ever thought 20 years ago that all the things that have happened with Golf Channel. You know, Palmer was a co-founder with TV mogul Joe Gibbs, who made an appearance on the Golf Channel on Saturday on the show, and he told a great story of how he first met Arnold and they became friends because Ben Crenshaw didn't stay at his guest house in the PGA Championship held at Shoal Creek 1 year. Over the ensuing years, they became friends and then partners in the Golf Channel venture. Golf Channel did, of course, benefit from Tiger Woods turning pro just 18 months prior to their start date. But, you know, so it was blessed with some good timing. Comcast eventually bought out the network from Gibbs and from Palmer. And then when they acquired NBC Universal, it gave Golf Channel even greater resources and branding capabilities. So, you know, probably the most significant moment in their history was when they signed a 15-year deal with Golf Channel in 2006 that gave it rights to broadcast like Thursday and Friday coverages. Who would ever watch Thursday and Friday golf? Who would ever do that? That just wasn't done. But that got to be a big deal. It added on to their European Tour coverage, and and you know, then they picked up the Champions Tour and the FPGA and now the web.com, and you know, they're all over the world. So, you know, at one point, you know, the investors, you know, the investors were telling Palmer, you shouldn't do this, you should get out of it, there's no way. And you know what? He said, the quote is this: let me say this to you. If I didn't try to hit it through the trees a few times, none of us would be here. And so he stayed with it, and you know, it's history what the Golf Channel has done. It's one of the biggest success stories in all of the television business. So congratulations to the Golf Channel, 20 years young and going strong.
And we are thankful to the King for taking that decision and Joe Gibbs to bring it up. We really have something to watch every single day. We can watch golf on TV. Hey, Fred, I have something. Let me tell you one thing. Last year, January 22nd, Billy Payne, the chairman of the Augusta National Golf Club and the Masters Tournament, Peter Dawson, the chief executive of the RNA, and Mike Davis, the executive director of the USGA, they were in Buenos Aires in Argentina to announce the formation of the Latin American Amateur Championship, which is a new amateur golf event aimed at stimulating growth and inspiring even greater interest in the game throughout South America, Central America, Mexico, and the Caribbean. But it also had something else. You know, this tournament was patterned after the highly successful Asia Pacific Amateur Championship, which was created back in 2009 by the Masters and the RNA to grow golf worldwide and get youths interested in the game. For this tournament, the Masters joined forces with the RNA again and added the USGA. That being said, in store is that the champion of that inaugural edition and all future event winners will receive an invitation to compete in the Masters tournament beginning this year. In addition, the winner and the runner or runners-up will be exempt into the final stages of qualifying for the Open Championship and U.S. Open Championship. Finally, the champion will receive full exemptions into the Amateur Championship, the U.S. Amateur Championship, and any other USGA Amateur Championship for which he is eligible. Well, that inaugural edition was this past weekend, and Matias Dominguez, a golfer from Chile, he battled nerves and a four-hour rain delay to win on Sunday and book his trip to Augusta to fulfill his dream of playing for a green jacket. He shot a 1-under par 71 in the final round at Pilar Golf Club in Buenos Aires, Argentina, for a one-shot win over Alejandro Tosti, the hometown boy in Argentina, and bested 107 other golfers from 28 countries throughout Latin America. You know, Matias was like most kids who fall in love with golf and dream of one day playing in the Masters. Not many others has faced such long odds. You know, for starters, Dominguez grew up in Santiago, Chile, a country where golf is an afterthought. Only one other Chilean has ever competed at Augusta National, and that was Enrique Orellana, who missed the cut 51 years ago. So until recently, Dominguez, who is now 22, wasn't even sure he wanted to play golf for a living. He overcame self-doubts to persevere, not to mention a change in culture, when he was recruited to play college golf at Texas Tech, which is not exactly a golf powerhouse. He's now a senior and is fourth in scoring average for the Red Raiders after four tournaments in the fall. But, you know, one chance was all he needed, the Latin American Amateur Championship. 1 week of great golf left him close to tears. And that's what all these events are all about, so that everyone, just like Matias, can shoot for their dreams, and with that, many more can get inspired and try as well. It's great to see how this humble young man from Chile now has earned the right to be among Rory McIlroy, Tiger Woods, and his golfing idol, Phil Mickelson, at Augusta in April. So, Fred, next year's edition will be played January 14 to 17 on the Pete Dye design layout at Casa de Campo, the Teeth of the Duck in the resort in Dominican Republic. So, great tournament, great concept. Hopefully, we can see many more coming up. And the golf, you know, is going to continue to grow in Latin America, which is very well needed.
Yeah, Carlos, I think we really have to applaud the people at the Masters for doing this. The Asia-Pacific Amateur has become such a big event, and now this Latin American tournament, this amateur with their exemption into the Masters. This is just really good stuff, and it can only be beneficial for golf down the road. A kind of a sad story, actually, in golf world this week. Australian golfer Robert Allenby, who has 4 PGA Tour wins, was mugged and beaten outside a Hawaiian restaurant after missing the cut at the Sony Open last weekend. Allenby, with a friend who appeared to be distracted, and someone else told Allenby that he was to meet his friend outside, left the restaurant with 4 men, then beat and robbed him, and threw him in the trunk of a car, drove him 6 miles away, and dumped him unconscious into a drainage ditch near a homeless encampment. Allenby was awakened by some homeless people kicking him and trying to take what little he did have left. He was helped by an ex-military person. And then the next day, when Allenby was shown tapes of leaving the restaurant with the 4 men, he didn't know who they were, how he got with them, or anything. So maybe he was drinking too much wine, I'm not sure. But Allenby posted pictures on Facebook. His face showed the effects of the beating, swollen eyes, huge red marks on his face. He took a pretty good beating there. Allenby has 22 wins worldwide and has not won since 2001. He's played in President's Cup team 6 times. Allenby said, "I'm still shaking, still scared. It's just too surreal, just amazing. How does it happen to me? I went from one area where I could have died to another where I got dumped and homeless people were trying to mug me even more. Sometimes we're all naive. We only think this happens in the movies." Well, you know, Carlos, the whole affair comes quite astounding. You know, a lone professional golfer with a pocket full of cash could very well have been the target of a random mugging and robbery. But if you remember, Allenby did have a little dust-up with Jeff Ogilvy after the 2011 President's Cup. Allenby had gone 0-4 as a captain's pick at Royal Melbourne, but did play well in the Australian Open the following week, and so Ogilvy had tweeted that it was good to see Allenby play better when the pair, and then kind of off the cuff, and Allenby took it like he was really making fun of him, and when the two men saw each other in the lobby of a hotel in Thousand Oaks, California, a couple weeks later, they kind of had a little bit of a tussle, got into it a little bit of a row right there in the hotel, but Allenby is flying back. He flew back to the U.S. On Sunday. He had planned to play in the Humana this week. I'm not sure if he's still in the field or if he's withdrawn, but he was planning to play. So kind of a bit of bother for Robert Allenby there. Kind of a bad go for him in Hawaii, but glad he's okay and hope everything works out well for him. I'm not sure if I lost Carlos or not, but I'm going to continue on with the last.
I'm here.
Oh, you're here. Okay, sorry. I'm sorry.
Yes, okay. I'm sorry. I have. I was saying it was muted, so sorry. It was. Okay. It got muted. The microphone. The technical difficulties.
Technical difficulties. Okay, you're on. You got the.
I'm on. No, yeah, I was saying that. You know, it's very sad. You know, to hear that happened to Allenby and to anybody. Thank God he's well, and hopefully he can be back soon and playing well. Hey, I have some other sad news you can say as well. You know, Bhavik Patel, he's a 24-year-old native of Bakersfield, California. He has become the second golfer to be suspended because of violation of the PGA Tour's anti-doping policy. Patel, who has a conditional web.com tour status and has yet to qualify for a PGA Tour event, has been banned for a year. The clock started back in October 7th, 2014, when he accepted a provisional suspension. He will be eligible to play again on October 7th of this year. That means he will not be able to play again until the Web.com Tour qualifying in December. The tour announced that suspension last Wednesday in a 3-paragraph news release, and the final paragraph stated very clearly that the tour would not have further comment. Patel said in a statement released through the tour that he used a performance-enhancing substance to aid in an injury recovery. You know, Doug Barron was the only other tour player to receive sanctions for the use of a banned substance. He was suspended back in November of 2009 for taking prescribed amounts of testosterone, but later received a therapeutic use exemption and was reinstated in September of 2010. We'll remember Vijay Singh still has a lawsuit pending against the PGA Tour for that deer antler spray fiasco last year, where he was going to be suspended, and they rescinded, changed the rules, and, you know, all this brings me to Dustin Johnson. Yeah, I know. I know what you might be thinking. Even when Johnson and his PR team says his most recent hiatus is not because he was suspended and are indignant that reports continue to circulate despite a denial from the tour, yet questions remain around about the actual reason for Johnson's absence, just as there were when he took a three-month break in 2012, which he said was because he tweaked his back while lifting a jet ski. Lifting a jet ski. Well, you know, one thing's for sure. His wife, Paulina, is due anytime soon with their firstborn, and so is his impending return to golf. He apparently has taken under his wing, he has been taken under the wing of his papa-in-law, you know, hockey's great one, Wayne Gretzky, and reportedly has shown a change in his attitude and demeanor towards everyone. You know, those are great news, whether it's that he's finally maturing thanks to his upcoming baby and relationship with Paulina, or the great one's influence. You know, DJ's natural athleticism and talent can take him to the top of the sport anytime. You just need to focus on it. Fred, I do hope he does shows that when he comes back and lets golf do the talking for him. You know, the spotlight's going to be brighter than ever over him when he returns.
You know, he's had such brushes with, you know, being right there in the limelight. You know, he's had his problems in some majors. And, yeah, so hopefully, you know, if he does settle down and get serious about the golf, I mean, the guy is so talented. You know, anything's pretty... it's really possible with him. And he's in an age where, you know, over the next 3 or 4 years, he could get a lot done if he really really put his mind to it. So, hey, Carlos, another kind of odd story. You know, we've had Brendan Elliott on the show talking about Little Linksters and the best PGA golf swing. Well, on Wednesday, January 14th, Steve in Orlando stole a trailer filled with his equipment that they used in the tournaments and in the teaching. The Little Linksters Association for Junior Golf Development is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and it's on the mission to introduce the game to all children ages 3 to 8. It even includes disabled children and all kinds of things. It's just a great program. Their trailer and its contents were valued at over $10,000. You know, Little Linksters is unsure what the coverage of their insurance will refund to them, but, you know, they're asking for any help or any donations that people can send in. The Little Linksters, as I mentioned, also holds the best Pee Wee golf swing competition. And, of course, this year, Jack Nicklaus, Keegan Bradley, and Frank Nalbolo are among the judges for that event. So, you know, like I say, they could use any help that anybody could give them. This is really an unfortunate situation for them. Donations can be made to Little Linksters at www.littlelinksters.com. That's littlelinksters.com. We wish Brendan all the best, and hope everything gets back together for him.
Hopefully it does, and there you got it. Go there right now. Go help and donate there to help the Little Linksters. Hey, Fred, one final story to end up the Par 5 news. You know, the PGA Tour completed its David Lee double in Hawaii this past weekend with the Sony Open. And Jimmy Walker demonstrated he's the true king of the early part of the PGA Tour's wraparound schedule after he dismantled the field this weekend and won for the second time consecutive with the Sony Open. He's becoming more difficult to ignore with each victory. Walker's 9-shot win at the Sony Open is the largest margin on the PGA Tour in nearly 6 years, and it was his fourth victory in the last 15 months, the most of any American in that stretch. His world ranking is now number 13, moving him closer to his goal of playing in the Olympics. But there's a tour rookie, you know, and that could very well become a name you will soon start to hear very much. And that name is the one of Justin Thomas, a 21-year-old son of a club pro in Kentucky and a former All-American at Alabama. On Friday, he figured out, you know, I cannot catch Matt Kuchar and Webb Simpson, who were all there in the top. So he just said, hey, let me try at least get a little closer to them. He then hit an 8-iron to 12 feet for birdie. Then he hit a wedge to 6 feet for birdie on the next hole and then pounded a tee shot. on the par 5 ninth and had only a 9-iron to the green. He hit that to 18 feet and made the putt for eagle. That was how he finished that day, and that gave him a 61 and tied David Thoms' 2006 YLI Country Club course record score on the reconfigured layout. You know, Davis Love III's 60 is the lowest round ever shot in the Sony Open, and that was set in 1994, just about 10 months after Thomas was born. But that came in when the course was played to a par 72. He shared the lead halfway then with Kuchar and Simpson, who seemed all the way up there in the front. Unfortunately, he tumbled down to tie for sixth at the end. But, you know, Thomas is... he's great. He had a successful rookie season last year on the Web.com Tour. He finished third on the final money list behind Adam Hadwin and Carlos Ortiz, and he led the circuit in birdie average and won an event during the Web.com Tour Finals. His best finish this season on the PGA Tour is at the Sanderson's Farm Championship in November, where he tied for fourth. Fred Justin Thomas, he's one of the most promising rookies this year on the PGA Tour, so add another name to the list of bright future young rising stars to watch this year. So, Fred, anything you have to say about that before you go on and present our sponsor, the United Golf Network?
I just have a question for you. You said he won a tournament in the final series and Web.com. What tournament was that, Carlos?
I don't know. It doesn't come to mind. I don't even know where it is. I don't know.
Nationwide Children's Hospital in Columbus, Ohio, at that great
city,
Ohio State University, Scarlett. Yes. He was all the rage down there. Everybody was talking about him. He really put on a show there, Carlos. Everybody predicted really good things for him. So, you know, I think this is just a glimpse of the talent that he has. So, yeah, Carlos, we are happy to have United Golf Network as a sponsor of the Par 5 News. They want every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn some money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel and accessories are available through United Golf Network with discount coupons for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, it offers every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. Instant and free access to Global Affinity, offering you discounted travel through Wyndham. They have a free membership to My Golf in the U.S., which offers discounted golf rounds in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. And also they have an online for sale by owner, which allows you to sell used or new equipment and earn some extra dollars. So visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
There you got it, UnitedGolfNetwork.com. And that wraps up Par 5 News, presented by United Golf Network. Now, it's time for our VIG segment, our very important guest of the week. And this week is none other than Susie Whaley. You know, she's a woman known for breaking barriers before. She did it again when last November she was elected secretary, becoming the first female officer in PGA of America history. You remember in 2003 when she became the first female to qualify for a PGA Tour event in 58 years in the Greater Hartford Open. In 2010, she became just the second woman elected to the PGA Board behind Sue Fisco. She's now 48 and is in position to become vice president of the PGA of America in 2016 and its president in 2018. You know, Fred, each step requires a formal vote, usually a technicality. So unless a major unforeseen thing happens, she will break another barrier in 3 years, Fred.
Yeah, hopefully she stays off Twitter and doesn't go the way of Ted Bishop. But, she has been a great golfer. You know, as you said, she broke the barriers. You know, one of only two women that's ever really qualified for a PGA Tour event, Babe Zaharias being the other back in 1945. And so she got to be fairly well known for that. And now with this historic vote, which puts her in line to become the president of one of the largest golf organizations in the world, one of the organizations that kind of set the policy and dictate which way golf is going to go, it's a very powerful position. And she was kind enough to talk to us a little bit and just gave us a very interesting interview. So I hope the listeners enjoy it, and you can go ahead and play that, Carlos.
We're excited to introduce Susie Whaley to the Back Nine Report. She's the first woman to be elected as an officer of the PGA of America, and is now in line to become the first woman president of the PGA in 2018. Susie Whaley, hello. Welcome to our show. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Susie, Fred here. We really, really appreciate you taking time. I know you're busy down in Orlando, and, you know, you're kind of used to being first in a lot of things. You were the first woman since Babe Zaharias in 1945 to qualify for an event on the men's PGA Tour at the 2003 Greater Hartford Open. And now with, you know, Augusta National adding three women members over the past couple of years, the RNA is elected to admit women members to their organization, and now your election as an officer of the PGA. Women are making big strides and also in the headlines of the golf world. It's about time, right?
You know, it is exciting, and I think it's wonderful. We certainly, as the PGA of America, strive to do every day, and our members across the country, is to get all persons to play the game of golf, it's whether they're female, male, people of color. So it's exciting for us, and I'm looking forward to having more and more women come out to our golf courses as we progress in the next few years.
Susie, I'm sorry, go ahead, Carlos.
Sure, no problem. Susie, you certainly have a well-rounded resume, and we really would like to know a little bit more about your background and how you started as a professional.
Well, sure. That probably goes all the way back. I certainly wasn't a professional then, but I started playing the game at the age of 9. My mother was an avid golfer, loved it. I had an older sister who was a great athlete, but didn't really take to it right away. She loves it now. And my mom actually introduced me to the game, and I loved it right away. And really was growing up in a town where we only played golf about 4 months a year because of the weather. I grew up in Syracuse, New York, and so I was also an avid ski racer. And my goal was really to participate as a skier in the Olympics as I went through high school. But I always loved the game of golf, and I was hurt in a downhill that really put my focus and energies on golf. I went to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and played 4 years for them on the women's golf team there. Was going to head off to law school, but had an incredible summer playing well after I had graduated from college, and instead sat my parents down and told them that I was going to go to tour school instead of law school. And, you know, really played my heart out and was fortunate enough to secure a conditional status card on my first try. And that really was my foray into professional golf in a very quick manner that I just gave you.
Well, Susie, you have certainly paid your dues. You've served on the National PGA Board of Directors as well as the Connecticut PGA Section Board of Directors on the national level. You've been the chair of the Junior Committee and sat as co-chair of the Player Development Committee, in addition to being a member of the Instruction and Diversity Committee. So, you know, what got you interested in becoming an officer and moving up through the hierarchy of the PGA of America?
You know, it's really just that. It was just a progression. When I first became a member in 2001 of the PGA of America, my husband's been a PGA of America member for over 25 years. I attended my first national meeting, in fact, with my husband when he was the president of the South Florida section, and I was not a member at the time, and really right then knew that I wanted to be a member of this organization. And so many people who shared my passion for the game, my passion for instruction, were working at facilities where I loved to be, and really were compelled to significantly change lives through the game. So I knew I wanted to be a member. I became a member in 2001, and right away wanted to serve within the community and within our section. It's a big part of our lives as a family is giving back, and I knew I wanted to be part of that. So So I really had the opportunity to meet other PGA professionals in my section by participating and networking in that manner, and really dove in to the areas that I was really engaged in and interested in. And from that, it just led to me running for a seat on the board of directors, because the more I got involved, the more I really saw the opportunities that we have as an association to offer resources and tools and to grow the game and the sport amongst so many. And then I served on the National Board of Directors, and certainly I'm really was enlightened to all over the country the efforts that were being made by our PGA professionals, and really loved the direction and the strategy and the vision that board, our current executive officers, and our staff had for our members and for the consumers that we look to have come to our facilities. So it was just a natural progression for me. I wanted to be a part of that after my board term. I wanted to help grow that vision and really continue the course that Derek Sprague, our current president, and Paul Levy, our vice president, have really put into motion, and I'm excited about being a part of that team.
You know, some of the segments of you know, golf are very strong. Certainly the PGA, you know, with incomes you derive from the Ryder Cup and some other things that you do, your PGA Championship, you develop a lot of income for your organization. The PGA Tour is strong. The LPGA is growing. USGA has a big contract with Fox Sports, so they're strong. At the grassroots, you know, we're still seeing golf courses close. And so the end result of this is, as you say, you know, we need to grow the game. We want to bring more people to it. One of your initiatives, I know, is PGA Junior League golf. And along with that, we need to help bring more women in and those kind of things. How are we going to get at that, Susie? What's going to happen with that?
We have three real initiatives that we're focused on right now as an association, and certainly our members across the country have programming every day at their facilities to bring more people to the sport or get more people to play the game. But the three that we're really focused on for 2015 as a part of our long-term strategic plan are Drive, Chip, and Putt, which that sign-up is coming up on January 22nd. So really excited for the opening registration for that, and that's an event that we have a partnership with other stakeholders in the business, the USGA as well as Augusta National, where all over the country there are host sites that do drive, chip, and putt competitions for youth. And if you qualify and make it through the regional championships, you have the opportunity to participate in the national finals, which is at Augusta, right before the event. So that certainly is something that's extremely exciting, has grown greatly in popularity. And we're really looking towards that to engage families and youth in the game. We also have PGA Junior League, which you mentioned, which is absolutely something that I cherish and love. I participate in that in the Connecticut section. Last year we had three teams, and we were lucky enough that our all-star team, which was a group of young men and women from our area in Hartford that attended the national championships in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm excited to say we placed fifth in the national championship. And that was incredible because there were over 18,000 young men and women that were participating in PGA Junior League golf last year. And certainly we look to see that grow exponentially in the coming year. And then finally, you know, we have the Drive, Chip, and Putt. We have PGA Junior League, and then we have Get Golf Ready, which has been extremely successful. We're in our seventh year of Get Golf Ready, and that is a program that we offer for people who perhaps have never learned to play the game, for people who have left the game and want to return for, you know, maybe work or family or any reason. And we want to get them back in quickly, integrated to getting back out on course and playing the game. And then for those who just want to play a little better golf. So it's been, those three have been really successful, and we're looking to advance those in the coming years and really see great growth in all three.
I have one more question for you. Last year, it was announced that the PGA and the LPGA, along with KPMG, all teamed up to host the Women's PGA Championship starting this year, which will be one of the largest purses on the LPGA Tour. It should garner a lot of focus, a lot of media attention to that event. Really helps the LPGA Tour a lot. Do you think, as you go around and talk to people, do you see that stimulating growth in the women's game by seeing more and more bigger purses, more and more women competing on the LPGA?
Oh, well, I'm so excited that the PGA of America and executive officers, our board, our members across the country really wrap their arms around this. And the KPMG PGA Women's Championship, we are thrilled to be a part of that, to have an elite major championship held this year in Westchester to really showcase the best in women's sport in golf. And, you know, I'm super proud. I can't wait to get there and be a part of that. We're looking to offer clinics and on-course opportunities. We have a leadership, a women's summit, really a leadership summit there that will get executive women together to really discuss inspiring greatness, not only on course, but in business itself. So, you know, for me as a female who used to play on the LPGA Tour and to see what Michael Wan and the LPGA Tour members have really accomplished in the last few years and the growth of the sport on a global basis, I am incredibly excited that the PGA of America is behind the LPGA Tour, that we're partnering with them, and we're really going to show domestically that this is something that we really want to look to for women and to respect those games and for the talents that they have and really showcase them to those participants perhaps in PGA Junior League golf that are in drive, chip, and putt, and show them what is possible and what on the golf course can be accomplished as a female or as a male. And it's just, it's fun to be a part of that.
Well, we, Carlos and I follow the LPGA very closely, and we really think you're on the right track with this partnership on the PGA Championship, with the LPGA Championship. I think that's going to be a really, really good tournament for everybody. And I guess, Carlos, that's all the questions I have. Did you have anything else for Susie before we let her get on about her day in Orlando?
Yes, Susie, just one quick question. You know, Rory McIlroy is an official ambassador for the PGA Junior Golf. What does it feel, you know, to have the number one golfer in the world and a youngster right now, because he's just 25 years old, to be an ambassador to the youth of for the future of golf?
We are incredibly excited that Rory has signed on to be the ambassador, and, you know, we're also obviously looking to inspire a female to do that as well. We have, you know, 50% of my PGA Junior League golf teams are girls, and so we have girls and boys playing the game, but Rory is an ambassador, obviously, for all junior golfers and really for families. You know, that's the word we really want to get out, that golf is a game. It's multi-generational. You can play with your grandchild, a neighbor, a friend, a great-grandfather, a great-grandmother on course together. And PGA Junior League Golf really offers that opportunity for youngsters to get involved in the game at a level that's not intimidating. They play on a team. They can miss a shot and laugh about it. Their partner may pick up the slack. We have parents and grandparents watching, and really that's what Rory is the epitome of health and wellness and of being outside and his family. And he's a fabulous ambassador, and we're so thrilled to have him a part of PGA Junior League Golf.
Yeah, that is a pretty good stuff. And we certainly want to congratulate you on your election as the first woman officer to the PGA of America. And we're gonna keep our eye and watch your progression as you go up through here and eventually become the president of that great organization, and we wish you all the best.
Well, I thank you so much for having me. Get out and play as much golf as you possibly can. That's what I'm hoping to do in the next few weeks as well. But if we can't thank you enough, and we'll hope to talk to you soon.
There you have it. That was Susie Whaley, right now the Secretary of the PGA of America, in line to become the first woman president of that organization. So, Fred, what a great interview from Susie.
Yeah, it was really really a lot of fun to be able to talk to her and learn a little bit more about her. I think she'll be a dynamite officer for the PGA of America. She has a real bright spirit and real outgoing and very approachable. So I really want to wish her best of luck going forward with that, Carlos.
And like you said, we'll be following her closely, and we'll bring anything to you on the news. Hey, that wraps up our VIG Very Important Guest of the Week segment. Right now we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to have our practice range, and we're going to talk about the PGA Merchandise Show. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our practice range. Every week, we pick a subject, and we start talking about it. We give our, each, Fred and I give our views on it and talk about it. But this week is in Orlando, the PGA Merchandise Show. And Fred, this time I'm going to take the side of the fan, our listeners who may not be, you know, familiar with what the merchandise show is. You know, this is the 62nd edition. It's being held starting today with what it's called Demo Day at the Orange County National Golf Center. Then what during what they call is the PGA Show Days, which would be the next 3 days, they will be at the Orange County Convention Center. So, hey, tell our listeners and our fans out there, what is all this about, this PGA merchandise show?
Carlos, it's just the largest congregation of golf professionals, golf manufacturers, golf suppliers, golf vendors, everything golf that you can possibly think about is here this week. It's just a great big convention of golf. There are over 6,000 just today alone for the demo day. On Tuesday is the demo day, and there are over 6,000 attendees just today. They hit probably over 150,000 golf shots on the 42-acre Orange County National Driving Range. There were over 100 participating companies that were set up with over 300 hitting bays with every conceivable club, shaft, head, style, club. You can't imagine. Everything was there, you know, from King and TaylorMade, Callaway, Titleist, you know, all the way down to the smallest grip manufacturer. Everything was there for you to put your hands on, touch it, see it, feel it, and talk to the experts. Demo Day actually began, Carlos, in 2003 with the partnership of the PGA of America, PGA Magazine, and the Worldwide Golf Exhibition. The first year, 20 golf equipment manufacturers attended, and it has grown into the massive interactive golf show that it has become. Demo Day not only features drivers, irons, wedges, and putters, but grips, keys, balls, training aids, launch monitors, footwear, sunglasses, and just anything you can think of. There was even an outfit there today selling coffee drinks, chilled coffee drinks, French vanilla and mocha and flavored that they were talking to course owners about putting on the golf carts for the cart girls to sell out on the golf course. So just anything and everything that you can possibly think about, range equipment, you know, just it's all here. You have that's the demo day it was today, and it's a 42-acre site. The hitting area goes all the way around. It's a ringed thing, and to walk clear around it. We were there for about 4 hours today, and we pretty much hit every booth and talked to something at every place. So the actual PGA merchandise show moves indoors to the Orange County Convention Center tomorrow with Bubba Watson doing the honors at the opening ceremony. There will be a host of high-profile golf professionals on hand. You've got names like Graham McDowell, Justin Spieth, Suzanne Pedersen, Greg Norman, Lexi Thompson, just a few of the names that are going to make appearances, be on hand to talk to people, you know, sign autographs, all that kind of thing. Butch Harmon, Hank Haney, Jim McLean, they're going to be around to answer questions, give tips, and put on seminars. Over here at the Orange County Convention Center, there's 22 acres under roof. There's over 1,000 companies and brands on display on the show floor, and over 40,000 industry professionals will come through the doors over the next 3 days, and they represent from over 80 different countries. In addition to all this, you've got Gary Williams, Damon Hack, Matt Ginella, and Charlie Reimer from the Golf Channel broadcasting live from the show floor every day. I mean, just call us. Anybody and everybody that's in the golf business is in attendance this week at the PGA Merchandise Show here in Orlando.
And you mentioned that, and all those people, and you see on the websites, you see all the photos, how huge you see that is. You know, on the website it says that some 1,000 top golf companies and brands, and that there will be more than 40,000 industry professionals from around the world reuniting there, what they call this the industry's annual global summit for the business of golf. That means that PGA professionals, retailers, and industry leaders will be there uncovering the latest trends, source the newest golf merchandise, test the latest equipment like you have mentioned, attend industry presentations, learn proven business best practices. You know, they network among the peers and move forward what is the business of the game. But some would say that it's just that, a business event, since it's organized in partnership with the PGA of America as a trade-only event. Do you see this as an event that grows the game of golf and not only the business side?
Oh, very much so, Carlos. For one thing, you've got those sessions today where Susie Whaley, who we just heard an interview from, led a panel of women in golf, talk about how to get women involved in the game of golf and grow it through that. In addition to the 3 days of the show inside plus the demo day outside, over the weekend there were training sessions for PGA professionals that they need to earn continuing education requirements just like any other profession. And they can attend and they learn how to help their members at their golf courses or their, if they're in a public course, the people that play there, help their juniors learn the game, learn new teaching techniques to help their players and the people that they work with enjoy the game more and appreciate it. So, yes, very much so, Carlos. It's an educational event along with the fact that all these companies and all these vendors are here so that the PGA pros and the people that bring the game to the local communities are up to date and familiar with all the advancements and all the technology that's available. Because as you know, it changes so fast, it's really difficult to keep up with. This is one place where they can get all that information, all that education, and then come back and disseminate it among all their members and all the people that play their courses.
So that being said, it's a great, huge, big event. And like you're saying, well, it does bring some updating to the golf professionals, and it does help at the end of the day, at the end of the chain, the golf sport. But where do you see right now this event moving to? I mean, it's as huge as it can be, and what does it do to become even bigger or better than what it is right now?
You know what, Carlos, that is a really good question. I don't know what they could do to make this thing bigger. I mean, it is unbelievable, the names that they pull in and the fact that just everybody is here. It is absolutely amazing. I know there are other shows. There's a show in Las Vegas, for example. They have a show in Europe that's fairly large. I think they have a show in Asia, Japan, or someplace that's pretty big also. But this one is kind of the granddaddy of them all, and this is one they all strive to be like. But I don't know what they could do to make it any bigger. I mean, the Orlando Convention Center is a gigantic place, and just the sheer fact of going in there and walking around for hours, it's a physical endeavor for sure. When we were here last year, and I've got appointments set up all afternoon tomorrow to get interviews. We'll be playing those as we go over the next couple of weeks to help our listeners maybe get some of the newest and best products and do our part to help listeners understand some of the new stuff that's out there and the new technology. But I don't know, Carlos, I don't know what they can do to make it any bigger and better. If everybody gets a chance, they should try to come here at least once. I had a friend of mine came down today, and we actually walked around the demo day today together, and he's been a golfer for some time and a fellow golf writer, and he was just kind of amazed, what it is. He didn't know what to expect. I tried to tell him, but he really got into it, had a great time. It's so much fun talking to these representatives of the companies and finding out what they're working on and what their ideas are. It's just, to make it any better, I don't know what they could do. For a golf nut like me, a golfaholic, it's like being a kid in a candy store. It's so much fun.
And no, I have to agree with you. I mean, I was just taking the other side of the story, right?
Sure.
But hey, I just have to mention to all the fans out there, just go to the PGA Tour.com webpage and go see where it says, the updates from the PGA Merchandise Show. And when you open that page, you're going to get a glimpse of how huge what Fred is being saying right now about how huge that convention center is and how full it is of companies there showing their stuff. And, if you're a fan of golf, and especially a professional and in the business, you have to be there. You have to be there. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it. I envy you, man.
We miss you, man.
Yeah,
next year.
You're having a great time there, man. But I'll make it someday. I'll make it someday. We'll be there. Hey, anything else you would like to add about the PGA Merchandise Show before we go on to our final putts?
No, I think we covered it. I hit all the points I want to make, and just the sheer fact of the size of it and the scope. I mean, just everything is covered. And the PGA, of America, they kind of take their lumps on some things. But they've really got this thing right. They really do a good job with it. We were here last year, and really look forward to coming again this year. It's really a good show.
It is, and hopefully, it keeps coming and coming, all those great things, the new things. I hope all the manufacturers keep getting things better and better, all the better for us. Hey, that wraps up our practice range. Let's take a very short break. When we come back, we have our final putts, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our final putts. We have always our final minutes. Right now we have about 3 more minutes to go. So, Fred, I believe you have some final putts you wanted to get in before we end the show.
Yeah, just a couple of real quick items, Carlos. Rory McIlroy has committed to play in the Honda. Of course, he played in last week at Abu Dhabi. He'll be playing next week in Dubai, and then he'll be coming over to the Honda when it starts his Florida swing. The GWAA, the Golf Writers Association of America, announced last week that they voted to give Jim Furyk the ASAP Sports Jim Murray Award for his cooperation with the media. And they also awarded Jared Lyle the Ben Hogan Award for remaining active in the game despite a physical ailment or illness. Lyle has had a couple go-rounds with leukemia and has made it back to play tournament golf again this year. Also, final item, the NCAA announced that the Division I men's and women's golf committees have selected Eugene, Oregon, the Eugene Country Club, and Sugar Grove, Illinois, which has the Rich Harvest Farms Golf Club, as sites for the 2016 and 2017 Division I men's and women's golf championships. In addition, the committee selected 23 other cities to serve as regional host sites for men's and women's championship play from 2016 to 2018, with the site selection approved by the administrative committee of the NCAA Division I Championships. The 2016 championship will be hosted at the University of, will be hosted by the University of Oregon in Eugene Country Club, with the women's championship held May 20th through the 25th, and the men's from May 27th to June 1. It is a Robert Trent Jones redesigned course. The Eugene Country Club previously hosted the men's championships in 1959 and 1978, and the USGA U.S. Women's Amateur Championship in 2008. It was also a stop on the LPGA Tour from 1962 to 1968. And, Carlos, that is all of the items that I have for tonight. Do you have anything else to wrap us up?
Yeah, I just have one more final, but very quick. You know, Tiger Woods, you know, he doesn't like cameras, but right now he has another reason not to like them anymore. You know, I don't know if you heard that his agent said it cost him a tooth. You know, he made a surprise visit there to Italy yesterday to watch his girlfriend, Lindsey Vonn, capture her record 63rd World Cup race. And the photo that ensued generated all the buzz. Woods was missing his front tooth. You know, the culprit, according to his agent, was a camera. Race organizers said that this was not reporting to them. They added that Woods, you know, they had to request extra security and a snowmobile to exit the finish area, and organizers met those requests. He had been wearing a scarf with a skeleton pattern over the lower part of his face, sunglasses, and a stocking cap. So the photo was taken when the scarf was lowered. So he has less reasons to be smiling right now. Well, back Niners. Another week. We have plenty to smile with.
It wasn't knocked out by Aylin a few years ago with a 9-9, right? It just happened now. Right?
That one was worse.
Okay.
Well, back Niners. Wrap up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf, and thank you for listening to us for the past hour. Special guests, special thanks to our VIG of the week, Susie Whaley, the Secretary of the PGA of America. We wish her the best of success, and hopefully she ends up becoming the first female president of the PGA of America. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Black Duck Radio. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We should be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.